Okay, so we were discussing the requirements to Tovo utensils and dishes. I think the last time, before the 4th of July, before Tisha B'Av, and before vacation, we talked about what does and doesn't require tefillah and how we determine the ownership, the reason, and the basis for the mitzvah. So this topic is divided into two parts in this book. So we're on page 164. This is the very end of the first Tfilas Kiyum Shiur. So we talk about the requirement for Klei Suda, meaning that the requirement to immerse dishes only applies when they are utensils that are used for food, that are used for a meal. So I believe that should be page 164. You want to share with one of them, follow on. I have an extra book downstairs, but okay, so we'll start from there. So Gemara Avodah Zarah, I shared this Gemara at the very beginning, but important to review here. So Gemara in Avodah Zarah explains that the requirement to immerse dishes applies to new dishes as well. Meaning in the Torah, when the original mitzvah came up, so we're talking about clay midyan, the dishes and utensils that were used by the Midianites. So those were obviously treif. So they need to be kashered and they need to be tovel. But if we look in source 36, the Gemara tells us, "Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Baravua, afilu kelim chadashim b'mashmam." Seems like you have to immerse new utensils as well. So, because if I were to kasher a utensil, so that should be considered as good as new also. But afilu hachi by tefillah, even then it requires tefillah. So it seems like that both new utensils and old utensils are being kashered that were acquired from a non-Jew require immersion. So maki afar Rav Sheshet ihachi afilu zu desar b'lanami. So it should be zuza, I think. Desar b'lanami. So Rav Sheshet says that that if that were so then if we're talking about sort of any metal utensil, then I should also have to tovel scissors that are used for cutting cloth. That should also require tefillah. So Amar le klei suda amurim b'parsha. So no, the context in the Torah is clearly talking about utensils that are used for food, and only those require immersion. But other things that we call utensils that are not used for food should not require tefillah. And Rashi explains that this is based on the fact that the pasuk says that kol davar asher yavo ba'esh, that anything that is used by fire has to be kashered by fire. So that's obviously talking about utensils used for a meal. So therefore, when it says v'tahir, when we're talking about immersion, so that should also only be talking about utensils used for a meal. So from this Gemara, we learn that only utensils that are used for food require tefillah, which should seem self-explanatory on its own, except that there are, of course, details to discuss. Shulchan Aruch in source 38 basically codifies that point, that it's specifically buying utensils for food from a non-Jew that need to be toveled. In source 39, Shulchan Aruch discusses in terms of, let's say that the food's not touching a particular surface, but the pot's touching a surface. So tripadish, which are apparently tripods. So if I put the tri if I put a you know a metal pan on top of a metal tripod or a trivet or something like that, if there's a I don't know if trivets are usually metal, but let's say there were, so those don't require tefillah because the tripod is not for the purpose of eating. So yes, it supports the pot, but I don't eat out of it. But with that said, grills require tefillah because when it comes to a grill, so I'm putting the food directly on the grill. So anything where the food is not directly coming in contact with the item should not require tefillah. And the Pri Chadash in source 40 explains that we go according to the majority use. So if a particular utensil sometimes has food placed on top of it, but generally it's not used for cooking and food is generally not placed in it, So then it shouldn't require tefillah. So we go by according to majority usage. So one thing that is obvious is that that food that's sorry, utensils that are used for cooking require tefillah, right? That's when we get into to pots and the like. But what about things that are used for storage? So they're not used for cooking. They're not things that that I really eat out of. They're not things I put out at a meal, but they're just used for storage. So in the Sefer Tefillas Kelim in source 41, so he says that bottles or boxes which are used for storing food such as bread, sugar, baked goods, vegetables. So, you know, like I know in, you know, in our pantry, we have these, so they're plastics, so they don't require tefillah, but we have these sort of plastic containers where, you know, where Eliana keeps, you know, a whole, you know, there's sugar in one and flour in another. Some people might put cereal and pasta in those things. So those do require tefillah. Again, assuming that they're metal or glass. So they do require tefillah because the food is being placed in it. But that's only the case if the items are placed directly into the container without packaging. So if I take a box of pasta and I put it inside a container, I'll give you an example. We have a bread box. It's a metal bread box. So I don't put the bread directly. I don't take the bread out and put it in the bread box. I keep it in the bag. Obviously, it's important for freshness. So in that case, the bread box does not require tefillah because the bread's not coming in contact with the box. But when you have a container where you're storing food without any sort of a packaging, so that requires tefillah, but obviously we're not going to make a bracha on those, or I shouldn't say obviously, but we're not going to make a bracha on those because they're not really used for the purpose of a meal. They're not used for cooking. They're just used for storage. We turn the page to source 42. So of Rav Vosner, Shmuel Vosner and Shevet HaLevi, sniffed her about 8 years ago, I think. So Rav Vosner discussed whether nutcrackers should require tefillah. So that's an interesting case because the nutcracker, first of all, when it comes to the nutcracker, it's only breaking the shell, but it's not really used for food preparation. It's not really coming in contact with the nut itself. It's just used. It's just being used to crack the nut, to shatter the shell. So in that case, you know, wasn't entirely clear to him, but he says, "Kein halev note." My intuition is such that it should not require tefillah. So that's a particular case where the utensil is not really being used for the food itself. So in a similar but a slightly different vein, Shulchan Aruch says in source 43 that when it comes to sakin shel shchita, so a knife that's used for slaughtering. So what's the deal there? So you know, the meat is eventually going to be used for you know, it's obviously going to be cooked at some point, but the knife never really comes in contact with prepared food. It's always being used for raw food that can't be used, or you know, the knife that the flaying knife that's used to take off the skin. So Rav Yosef Karo, this is relevant for Sfardim, he holds that these are not required tefillah. A shchita knife will not require tefillah. However, the Ramah says v'yesh cholkin, some disagree. Tovu tovu blo bracha. So since there is an uncertainty somewhat, so we wouldn't make a bracha. But so even though most of us probably don't have shchita knives, I don't think that anybody here is slaughtering chickens or cows in their backyards, if you even have a backyard. But that has important relevance because here we're talking about something that comes in contact with, let's say, raw meat or a raw product. And the Ramah says that it requires tefillah without a bracha. So this becomes a very basic machlokas Ashkenazim and Sfardim. So in Sefer HaKashrus, which is generally comes from an Ashkenazi perspective, so if you have any utensils that come in contact with food only in the earliest stages of preparation, let's say chicken scissors. I guess I don't know if people use them for cooked chicken, but let's say you have you know that you have utensils for cutting meat only in its raw form. So those require tefillah without a bracha. With that said, if it were to be used also with edible food, so then it would be tovled with a bracha. And likewise, if you have a utensil where the food becomes ready to be eaten in that, so obviously, let's say a pot, so you're cooking, a pan, cooking the chicken in a pan. So when it goes in the oven, it's raw, but when it comes out, it's cooked. So that obviously requires tefillah with a bracha. With that said, the Yalkut Yosef, Rav Avadya Yosef, in Source 45, disagrees. It goes according to the Mechaber, according to the Chaber Shulchan Aruch. So anything that, for example, a shechita knife would not require tefillah because it's not used at a stage where the food is edible. He says also a coffee grinder would not require tefillah because the ground coffee is still not ready to be used at that point. I don't make coffee, but I'll take his word. I'll take his word for that. Okay, so that's with that particular point. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in Source 46. So this is sort of goes back to what we were saying before, that you know, if I have a container where I'm storing food, so that container would require tefillah. But we said if there's if the food is in packaging, so it shouldn't require tefillah. So could I let's say put some sort of napkin in it, in which case the food is separated from the container? So Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says no. If you're just going to spread a cloth or paper, plastic, so he says that requires tefillah with a bracha, because that's not real packaging. It's a very sort of insignificant barrier. So that has implications for one thing we discussed one of the previous times was the candy platters. Let's say you get a fancy candy platter where the platter is metal or glass. So we discussed a couple aspects. We're going to discuss a couple aspects of that. But one relevant point is that that does require tefillah. It becomes in this particular place. What's in this particular scenario? What's problematic is that if you buy the candy platter and the candy is directly on the platter, so the platter in theory should have been toveled before. So we'll get to the tovel part in a second. So one potential solution though would be to put some sort of napkin or cloth between the candy and the platter, but that actually is not sufficient. That's not sufficient. It would have to be, the candy would have to be in an actual bag that would be regular candy packaging. So that's one relevant point there. Another related issue is in terms of toveling these candy platters is, could the store tovel the candy platter before they put the candy on there, and then you buy the candy platter? So Source 47, page 168. So two points that come up here. Number one, if I acquire a utensil that could be used for food, but it's not. So let's say scissors. Let's say I have regular scissors. So I don't have to tovel the scissors, but in that case, I can never use those scissors for food, not even once, right? I can't, if I have a regular pair of arts and crafts scissors or, whatever regular scissors that you have, so you can't cut the chicken with those because you didn't tovel the scissors. If you want to tovel the scissors, that's fine, but if you're not going to tovel them because you're not really using it for that purpose, then you can't do that. That's what the Ramah says. But the second point that the Ramah says here is that if a second Jew acquires the item from the first owner for the purpose of the food, so then the second owner has to immerse it. So this is where the candy platter issue comes up, is that let's say it's a metal candy platter, and I'm putting the candy on it, and it's not enough to just have a, to have a paper cloth or a napkin separating it. Awesome. Maybe the store owner or the manufacturer should total the platter before the candy's put on it. Problem though is that somebody is going to buy the candy platter, and the obligation fila really falls on the buyer. And the reason for that is, according to the Taz, in source 48, is that when the store owner has the platter, so the purpose of the platter for him is for business purposes. He's not using the platter to eat from it. He's using it for business purposes. He's using it as a tool for selling something. So therefore, it's the Jew who is buying the platter who wants to use it for food purposes. He or she has to do the tefillah. But the store owner is only using it for business purposes. So they can't do the tefillah. That is according to the Taz. So this is codified in the Sefer HaKashrus that he says, if someone owns a houseware store, it's praiseworthy when they build a mikveh to allow the customers to immerse utensils. A couple years ago, and we made, I guess it's when we made our first Pesach during COVID. So we went to Amazing Savings in the Five Towns. And one thing that made things very easy for us, being that we were buying all these new Pesach utensils, is that they had a mikveh right outside the store. It was a really wonderful thing. I was actually in Borough Park today. Had to go to Borough Park. Not that I enjoy driving to Brooklyn, but I had to do it. So we passed by a store where there was like a big advertisement that there's a kosher kalim inside the store or by the store. So he says that's a very good thing. But with that said, he says the purchasers should perform the immersion after the sellers transfer the articles to their ownership, right? Because again, the as much as it would be very convenient if you have a candy platter and you total and the store owner totals the platter before anything else happens. Problem with that is that when there's a transfer of ownership, so that's when the tefillah is really required, and that's further explained on page 169. Fine. So then finally, Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach said this is true of gifting as well. That if I'm going to gift merchandise, I might think I'm doing a favor by totaling it before it's given out, but you can't really do that. One case where I saw this actually come up was shot glasses. So let's say, sometimes people order custom shot glasses they're giving out as a goodie at a ufra for a wedding or I don't know, bar mitzvah or something like that. So the Baalei Simcha can't tovel all the glasses beforehand. Each individual person has to tovel that glass themselves. Okay, we'll stop here for questions. Any questions about the requirement, Tony?
Yep. So what I must miss that. Why is it that the Baal Simcha can't tovel them beforehand? Only the person who's actually eating from it can make the do the tovling?
Exactly.
Wait, can I ask the same question? Let's say
Exact
you're
same
making,
question.
well, no. If you're making a simcha and you're dropping off gifts at the hosts and like you're buying them Danish and you bought a glass platter and you tovel the platter and give it to them with the Danish as the hostess gift, that was wrong?
According to Mincha Shlomo, that seems to be what he's saying.
Okay, guys, retovel the platters.
I'm not going to comment on any previous situations.
Fine.
I think bidyavid, obviously we're not talking about any sort of major avera, but in theory it would be on the person who's actually going to use it to total it.
The owner. Okay, and then
So,
another question. Oh, Tony, go ahead.
no, finish yours. Sorry.
Okay. I have a pair of Fleishik scissors and a pair of Melachik scissors for all these plastic things that are like shrink wrapped, and I just cut off the edges, let's say, these like pressure packed plastics, and then I slide the salami out or I slide the cheese out. Those scissors have to be toveled even though they never touch the food?
No, if they never touch the food, then you don't have to tell them.
Okay.
Definitely not.
Thank you.
So
Disposal.
disposable.
If it's disposable, yeah, okay. So her pointing out, obviously, if it's disposable, again, we're talking about things that would require tefillah anyway. Especially this candy plastic. Well, so with a candy platter, so if it's if it's disposable, so you don't have to tofu it. But sometimes, I guess, in the upper scale store, so they might give you like a nice actual platter.
Things that you put on the table, so you're not toying with the table because it's contacting the table.
Exactly. Well, that's a.
People don't do that.
So you're saying because somebody might put a cookie on the table? Yeah. Okay. No. Well, first of all, we have a wooden table here, so we're fine from that perspective. And I did when we were first married. My parents loaned us a glass table. So no, you don't. You don't have. I wouldn't call that a kli suda. Tony,
just for clarification, so I get a candy dish from somebody. I can eat the candy, and then when I'm finished, I table the dish. I mean, I can eat the candy first when they give it to me, I assume. What am I doing?
It seems like that, but the candy is already on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's on it. There's nothing you can do about that already if they're not allowed to table it for you.
And the stores are under the VOD.
Well, we're also, so this was the whole thing that I mentioned, that Rabbi Ari Leibowitz, in the Five Towns or North Woodmere was, talking about situations where it comes up in stores under Avad, and yet, it seems like if you're eating the candy out of the dish, so really, the dish really would require its tefillah beforehand. I'll double check.
Very
I'll double
complicated.
Check on that. That's
yeah.
That's what it seems like.
So we had town variety before you came to that. And on Main Street, everyone bought there as a mikvah. It was very convenient.
Town variety had a mikvah, Herbis Thomas, yeah?
And you never replaced anything like that. So in the whole Main Street, whole Jewish neighborhood, they can't make one mikvah and amazing savings or something. It's like.
Although,
it's more difficult to go to titles.
Right. Although there's about to be two Kiel mikvah in Kew Gardens Hills, because I assume the one that they were renovating will be done at some point. And then I just found out that Young Israel Queens Valley and Avas Israel are doing a joint Kiel mikvah at Young Israel. So. It'd be easier. Yeah.
The whole slew of people that do.
Okay. So, Sefer Akashas for the Tefillos Kelim. I don't remember which Sefer it was. Sefer Akashas says it'll be a nice thing for these stores to figure it out. Okay. Let's move on to page 183. Continuing on this topic. So here we're talking about where things get tovel, obviously in the mikvah, but we'll just spell this out a little bit. So Gemara Avodah Zarah says that that utensils that are immersed, kulan tzrichin tefillah bar b'misa'a, you require immersion in a body of water that is 40 sa'a. So menahani mile, where do we know this from? Tani bar kapara mitoch shenemar b'mei nida. So the original psukim that discuss the requirements to tovel new dishes says v'taher ach b'mei nida yischata, that it should be done in mei nida. So therefore, shomei ani shetzari chazal shlishi u'shvi. So should this, when we say mei nida, we're talking about the same thing with Paraduma, where that's also made nida, where you have to sprinkle on the third and seventh day. So no, we don't have to do that. The Torah says ach, so it's different than the Paraduma case. So what does made nida mean? So maim shenida tovel spahen, water in which a nida could tovel. So ave omer arbeim sa. Women tovel. And men who are also are impure would tovel in a mikvah of 40 sa'ah. So that's the same thing with utensils as well. The requirement for 40 sa'ah comes from the fact that the entire body has to be immersed. So Chachamim decided that 40 sa'ah was the very minimal amount that a person could fit in. Of course, one thing that one will notices that that mikvahs for kelim are much smaller than mikvahs for human beings, because again, we're not asking somebody to a person's not going to constrict to that extent, but for utensils, it doesn't need to be that big. And if you look at the kelim mikvah, so they're obviously not anything that anybody would want to jump into. So the requirement is the same. The same amount is required in theory. Shulchan Aruch in source 2 explains that there's really two kinds of kosher locations for purification. One is sort of a natural spring. A natural spring would also be kosher for both toveling dishes and for a person to tovel in. But when it comes to sort of the mikvah, that collects rainwater, so that has to be done in a place that's gathered. It has to be in a place that's gathered. So with that said, any sort of sea, ocean, etc., is kosher for tefillah. But obviously, the human-made sources have to be sort of gathered. They can't be flowing. They have to be from rainwater. It's an ocean, yeah. We generally don't put salt water, especially for that human being, so we don't put salt water in regular human mikvahs, but yeah, I mean, an ocean is kosher for that purpose. The Rambam and the Torah have machlokas about whether a mayan, whether a spring requires 40 sa as well. Essentially, we paskin, as brought in Shulchan Aruch and source 4, that whether you're talking about a natural spring or sort of human-made mikvah, so they equally require the measurement of 40 sa. Don't want to get too caught up in that, but that's just a point that's made. And this is brought in Sefer Tfilas Kalim as well. The Sefer Tfilas, Sefer Tfilas Kalim says springs and rivers can purify even if their water is flowing and not gathered in one place, provided that the amount of water from the beginning until the end equals 40 sa'a. So even if it's not the 40 sa'a in one place, but the entire measure of it is that. So then they note here, the custom in most places today is to immerse utensils in a kelim mikvah, which is a small mikvah usually attached to and located next to the main mikvah. It's not always true. I think actually Beit Gavriel one is not done that way. And they note in the footnote here that, of course, if somebody, is on vacation in a sort of a beach location and there wouldn't be a kelim mikvah, but you wanted to buy utensils for your vacation house, so you could do that. You could do that in the ocean. Very good. The Aruch HaShulchan explains that that a kelim mikvah is kosher even if only a small amount of water in the mikvah is actual mikvah water, but as long as they're connected, as long as there's a connection, so that would be considered sufficient. That'd be considered sufficient. Okay. Any questions up to this point? It's the sort of ancillary point.
Used to get dishes when you went to the movies.
They
gave you a dish.
Oh.
Used to bring it to eat it on lunch at the beach.
Wait, at the beach, and
then
you just
bring it in. But sometimes we dropped it.
Okay, so that actually that reminds me. So could one tovel kelim in a regular mikvah that's used by human beings? So technically speaking, of course, the answer is yes. Could one tovel their kelim in a regular mikvah that's used by human beings? So the answer is obviously, of course, it's possible, but we obviously don't recommend that, because if somebody's going to tovel their knives and then they drop the knife in the mikvah, they don't realize, so that's obviously a danger. So that's why communities generally have a separate kelim mikvah from the human mikvah, even though halakhically they are equivalent. Okay.
So That was a case of flatbush once. They dropped it and they broke the glass or some dishes. Or
inside a human mikveh.
They closed the mikveh. They put up a big. It was like crazy.
Yeah, that's problematic. Okay, last thing we'll discuss is the concept of chatzitza, which is something that comes up a lot because most of our utensils, particularly pots and stuff, come with stickers on them. So
yes,
the concept of chatzitza is a separation. So the Gemara Yanida defines this, and again, it's the same thing for both utensils and human beings. So Rabbi Yitzchak says, "Dvar Torah, it's by Torah law." Rubo hamakpid alav chotzitz. According to Torah law, the prohibition of having a chatzitza is when that chatzitza covers the majority of the item. And here, since I'm talking about kelim, I'm talking about items, but this will be true about people as well. And the person's particular, that you wouldn't actually want it there, that you would have a problem with that. Rubova inomakpita love, if it's something that constitutes the majority, but you're not particular about it being there. So technically speaking, it should not be a chatzitza. However, gazra rubo sheinomakpita mishum rubo hamakpita. But in order to not have to make distinctions, you know, is it something that I care that's there? Is it something I don't care that's there? So the rule across the board is that if something is covering the majority of the item and it's something you really wouldn't want there, or even if it's something, whether it's something you would want there or whether it's something you wouldn't want there, so we don't allow you to tovel that. The gazra miyoto hamakpid mishum rubo hamakpid, and we extend that to even something that's small that you're makpid about, we would say should not be chotitz also. So, yeah, so if there's anything on the utensil, even if it's a small amount that you wouldn't want there, that you would eventually take off, so it has to be removed before you tovel it. So the leagues are not miyoto she'eno makpid alav bishum miyoto makpid. So maybe we should also have a decree that a small substance that you don't care about should also be not allowed. So that's called a gzera. That's an extra level of gzera, and we don't make a gzera l'gzera. So if you look at this chart again, just to put things in very simple terms, if the chatzitza covers the majority of the utensil, so if it's something that you would care about, so then that's prohibited from the Torah. Something you wouldn't care about, so midrabanan, we're careful not to do that. The chatzitza that covers the minority of the utensil, so if it's something you would be particular about, so again, it's not allowed midrabanan. But if it's something that's the minority and something you wouldn't really care about, so it's not considered a chatzitza, and that's something that's codified in Shulchan Aruch. So a very important implication of that is that let's say you have some like black stains, right? Sometimes that happens on pots. You have some, you know, there's these stains. So if it's a very small amount and it's not something that's ever going to come off, so we wouldn't consider that to be a chatzitza. To whatever extent that it can come off, we would try to get it off. But at a certain point, if it's never going to come off, then and it's a small amount, then we wouldn't be makbid on that. So our Sinai Shulchan Aruch says tzarich la'avir achul akodem tefila. Rust should be removed before immersion. Assume that's in a case where it was a previously used utensil by non-Jew. Lo havir, if it was not removed. So if it's something I'd be makbid about, then it would be considered a chatzitza. But if you scrubbed it and there's still a little bit of rust that remains on it and you can't get it off, so then that's a miyot she'eno makpid alav, because that's something that's always going to be there. So we presume that you don't care. It's not considered to be a chatzitza. So Sefer Kashrus in source 10 says, this is the rule. Any interposition that is found on minority of the surface area of the utensil, and most people are not particular about its presence, including the owner of the vessel himself, one may immerse the vessel with the interposition. However, l'chakhila, one should remove even such an interposition. So like when it comes to stickers, first of all, I don't know if it's makpid alav or not. Do you care that the sticker is there? Do you not care the sticker is there? So certainly if you care the sticker is there, you definitely have to remove it. But even if you don't care about the sticker being there, and it's presumably the sticker is only really a small amount, so you sh- L'chachilo should still remove it. Sometimes what happens, these stickers are like so difficult to get off and you can't get like all the paper off. So that's what we would call probably a rubo a miu she'eno makpid alav, right? Something that's small that we wouldn't be a makpid about. One final point, because we're about to get kicked off this, but in source 11 and 12, it explains that that when you're toveling the item, so your hand is technically a chatzitza. So the trick for that is to put your hand in the mikvah, and it doesn't, you know, I do this no matter what. So it, in theory, it should be held lightly, so that way the water will go in between your fingers. But just to put your